The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our cannabis community chat.
We return to the Portland Normal meeting that took place this Saturday. Anthony Johnson from New Approach Oregon taking questions and answers from the membership.
All right, let me help out with this. We are recording, so we want to make sure we get the questions on the mics. Herb will be on this side. I'll be on this side. Who's got a question? Here we go. Question number one.
First off, Anthony, thank you very much for all the work that you put into this. You know, I'm not alone in knowing all the time and how much effort this takes. Since you spend so much time in Salem, you know, I went down there for the first time last week and sat in on the joint committee. They're open to the public, so Anthony is right that you can go there and, you know, support by just being there. And but since you spend so much time there and you have your finger right on the pulse, how do you feel that they're going to go? Because I know there's a lot of unknowns right now. You know, we're all just kind of waiting. But how do you feel that they are going to have for the licensing requirements just being from, like, opening up? Sorry, I just woke up like a half hour ago. Because my concern is that they have licensing open just, you know, I see this not only as a great opportunity for our state to get tax revenues, but I see that this is an awesome opportunity for Oregonian small businesses. And we've been hearing a lot from, you know, who are they going to allow, who are they going to accept licenses, who are they going to give license to? I'm just wondering what's your feeling. One, what's your feeling about opening licensing just to Oregonians? And two, what do you think that they're going to do with that?
So Measure 91 was silent on residency requirements. I don't really have a position either way on residency requirements. Probably not going to take a position on that. Don't necessarily oppose them. I think the legislators' inclination is to protect Oregon businesses as much as possible and the small kind of mom and pop shops. And so if I had a crystal ball or trying to predict if there were going to be some type of in-state residency requirement for at least, if not owners or 50% owners or similar to the medical marijuana facilities, you have to have a manager, you know, person responsible for the facility be an Oregonian resident. I think that's most likely going to occur. I think the one thing that's probably up in the air is how much investment can come from out of state. You know, I think there is a concern about big money coming from out of state and kind of controlling the market. But at the same time, if somebody is a mom and pop operation and they want to expand, you know, say they're supplying a medical marijuana dispensary now, but they'd like to expand to a Measure 91 license, maybe do both on the medical side and the Measure 91 side, and if they have a rich relative that lives in Colorado or California, their ability to get some investment or a loan from them, I think is probably something the legislators are open to allowing, particularly because no business can get a small business loan from a bank for a marijuana business at the moment. So if I had to predict, I think there will be some type of residency requirement, at least a manager or a co-owner that's an Oregon resident, at least for the first few years under the licensing system.
Okay, good. All right. Anyone else? Yes. Let's come over here.
Thanks. Thanks for taking this question. Had a quick question about the school zones and dispensaries specifically. You talked about, you know, the LCC or the OMMP facilitating some kind of, like, move if a school was to pop up in 1,000 feet of your dispensary. What provisions were they specifically, you know, that you had in mind when addressing this issue?
The provisions as far as What exactly?
Well, you said that you touched down on if a school was to open up within 1,000 feet of an existing dispensary, there would be steps to rectify the situation or to handle that in a specific way. I was wondering if you could actually elaborate on that a little bit more.
Gotcha. So the bill that's before the legislature, I believe it just opens up to rulemaking to come up with a process for that. And I think some of the things that would be debated, on one hand would be don't have to move at all. Let's say the school moves in 990 feet away from you. maybe that can suffice. Or you have a year to move, or maybe it can be amended that you have, 18 months to move, but most likely, a year to move to find a new place and to have the ability to, not see your life savings go away. So that's probably the most likely thing, is to give you a time frame before you can move. Thank you, Sam.
Anthony.
Hey, Leo.
I was wondering if you could comment on the House bill that was introduced by Lou Frederick last week regarding the expungement of nonviolent marijuana crimes and that take place before July of 2015.
Definitely completely in support of that. I don't know where that bill is at the moment, but I think it's something we should definitely monitor and throw our support. I do know we do have some legislators that's definitely important for. So I think it's something that we have a good chance of getting past this session. So it's definitely something to monitor. I don't think it has happened. Lee, are you aware of?
Aware that he had introduced a bill. I know that in 2013, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association sponsored a bill that reduced manufacturing from an A to a B felony so it could be expunged after 20 years. And change the delivery statute to be in C felonies so that they could be expunged after 3 years. There was a glitch in it, however, that made it so if you got convicted today of manufacturing, you could expunge in 20 years, but you couldn't relate back. And there is a bill to fix that was scheduled for hearing this week in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was pulled because of concerns about how Measure 91 affected it. So I'm guessing that between whatever it is OCDLA is doing and whatever it is Lou Frederick is doing, we're going to get some positive result that takes care of this issue. What is important, and what I hope groups like Portland Normal could work on, has to do with the fact that at any given time, there's 100 mostly men in Oregon prisons solely on cannabis-related offenses, and perhaps doing something. I have spoken with a dispensary owner who is going to be working with a group that the law school had set up, the Justice Institute, on this. But it would be a good Portland Normal project too, to try and see if we can get Governor Brown to commute those sentences, and we could free the prisoners, because that is what Measure 91 is about. Building an industry is how we got to that, to the freedoms that we're going to have under 91. But the industry is secondary to ending the arrests and prosecutions and freeing the prisoners. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee. Anthony, over here.
So, hi, Anthony. I just
hey, Steve.
I know that we have quite a few things that we're trying to keep track of here. I'm have at least half a dozen bills that I know I'm following. And one I'm concerned about is HB 2546 that adds cannabinoids to the Clean Air Act. I know the intention of that is that legislation is to protect minors from tobacco and e-cigarettes. But we're talking about trying to have, where's our pub? Where's our vape lounge? And this is definitely going to inhibit that, and that is concerned. I've already emailed all the members of the committee, but I don't know where that bill is at, and I've wondered if you were tracking that at all.
That bears in that bill is in the health care committee?
It's passed out a committee, and it's going to get a third. It's at its third reading in the House. It's going to be voted on soon in the House. I have a meeting scheduled on Monday to talk with Representative Buckley, who's one of the co-sponsors about it. But in email communications, he's indicated he didn't want to use that bill to create vapor lounges. Now, there may be one thing Russ and I agreed on, and that I testified about on 2641, is that Maureen Dowd wouldn't have wound up in a hotel room eating chocolate and wondering why nothing was happening and eating some more, you know, if she had a lounge to go to. So it's critical that this happens, and I'd be curious, just kind of to build on your question, if you're hearing that from legislators or some other vehicle besides House Bill 2641 that can address the need for that.
Yeah, I have heard that having an exemption for particularly for medical patients or getting kind of the same type of treatment that cigar bars have for like a special license, those are possible. So I think that important for people to let their legislators know that bill, if it passes out of the House, which I expect it will then move to the Senate. So then we'll have a chance to either amend it then during the Senate or tackle another bill that would, you know, I think the list of priorities, I'm sure a lot of people would like to have cannabinoids. As far as the, you know, you gotta say if you're 18, you can't, you know, you can't buy it, then that's completely acceptable. Then, you know, I think we'd like to, most people would like to see, you know, the cannabinoid be stripped out for everyone. If we can't get it for everyone, then at least for patients. And then if we can't do that, then at least to have a separate lounge like cigars have. So I think it's, you know, I think it's possible to do. And I think that's, if, you know, I think it's something we can work on this session. And definitely if we can't get it done this session, then future sessions.
There's no science to adding it to the Clean Air Act, though, and we're talking about fighting junk science or lack of science. I mean, cannabinoids are neuroprotective. There's all these studies about it doesn't do lung damage the way tobacco does. I mean, there's no science supporting it being part of the Clean Air Act.
That's correct, Steve. I guess probably one of the things that is can be very maddening for everybody involved in cannabis activism is that science can kind of go out the window in the halls of the legislature or the halls of Congress. Or
hey, Steve, if you email me about that, I'll put together a fact sheet and a here's the studies to look at thing that we can at least get to them so that they know that they're passing junk science.
I submitted as written testimony stuff from California Normal that Dale Gehringer had provided me, that California Normal had submitted in a some kind of like a county hearing on this issue. So, you know, it's in the record anyway. And in fact, if you look up the committee, look up the hearing, look up the exhibits, you can find that there.
But that science definitely, it can't hurt. But unfortunately, good science doesn't always win the day in politics.
Any other questions?
Anyone else? Sam? I just wanted to add to that in terms of, and Lee, maybe you can testify this as well. You said that how many lobbyists were working on that bill right now, Lee?
There's 50 lobbyists were working on the bill.
Okay.
When I testified, Sam, I sat next to a guy from Reynolds, in R.J. Reynolds.
Yeah.
So,
fuck.
You know.
So with that in mind, you know, for those of you who are not super familiar with the legislative process, once a bill passes out of one chamber, whether it be the House or the Senate, if it gets amended in the second chamber, it has to go back to the original chamber that it was in. And so if you're thinking about doing some kind of legislation with vapor lounges that has that kind of direct effect, I would heavily encourage you to look for a different bill to work it into and just be mindful of what the original language is so you can make sure that they mesh. Because with 50 basically tobacco lobbyists working on that bill, I don't see any way in hell that they're going to allow you to move it back to another chamber, open it back up to make more amendments, and then push it through the other side. So just something to think about in terms of legislative strategy.
Thank you, Sam. Anyone else over here on this side?
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Anthony. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the fears that are being raised by the legislature. I think understanding fear as sort of the resistance to the progress that's being made, and if you could talk a little bit, and not just kind of the obvious, you know, preventing it from getting into minors, or DUI issues, but some of the fears that are sort of contained in some of the opponents of what's going on in Salem.
Some of the kind of fears that are brought up, you know, I think the cities and counties like to bring up the fact that they don't think they get enough money and that they're going to have to spend more on enforcement than they're getting, even though Measure 91 gives 10% to cities and 10% to counties earmarked for the local law enforcement. And then you hear a lot of fears of, you know, how to track marijuana from seed to sale and not to have interference from the federal government, which I think is something that all of us are going to, you know, want to be paying attention to and have concerns about. And high concentrate THC products, you know, butane hash oil, propane hash oil, things like that, especially things that are explosive, definitely, or can be explosive, not done properly, definitely concerns folks and people who are allies of ours at the legislature and opponents as well don't want to have a, you know, Maureen Dowd story hit the Oregonian, you know, a few days before 4 to 8 states are voting on legalization in 2016. So that, you know, so the packaging and dosage and labeling of edibles, leakage into the underground market, federal interference, and ensuring that there's enough revenue to properly enforce are all big concerns and fears that, that folks have.
Anyone else over here?
All right, that's great. Give Anthony another hand for coming out here
and spending
some time with us answering some questions.
Big thanks to Anthony Johnson for being a part of our inaugural meeting of Portland Normal. We'll be meeting again on the last Saturday, or the fourth Saturday, I should say, of March. That'll be March 28th at the Tony Starlight Room, 1125 Southeast Madison in Portland, Oregon. We'll also be streaming the meeting live on the Portland Normal YouTube channel. Stick around. We've got the anti-drug public service announcement of the day coming up next, and then the radical rant. Why can't officials accept that we want legal marijuana? And why don't they understand their duties under the law? Stick around, we're back right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.